Hey, what's up, everybody? Taylor Price here for the San Francisco 49ers, and we have a special edition of 49ers Radio. Today, we've announced George Seifert as the 2014 inductee into the San Francisco 49ers Edwards J. DeBartolo Sr. Team Hall of Fame. It's pretty exciting stuff. Caught up with George recently. He was driving up to his place in Nevada. He spent 30 minutes on the phone with us talking about his entire career from when he rose through the coaching ranks, met up with Bill Walsh at Stanford, took over the team in the 80s, won some Super Bowls, and was part of the difficult decision of trading away Joe Montana and bringing up Steve Young as the team's starting quarterback. George was a great man, born and raised in the San Francisco Bay Area, went to high school in San Francisco, played his college football at Utah, just some really interesting stories that he shared with us. So I can't wait for you guys to listen. Enjoy this piece of history as George Seifert tells his life and coaching with the 49ers and how he rose up the ranks. And even some good stuff on Jim Harbaugh at the end of the piece I think you guys will enjoy. So if you're a hardcore Niner fan and you love the stories from the 80s, from the 90s, and everything going on with the team currently, this podcast interview is for you guys. So enjoy it and check it out. It's 49ers Radio with George Seifert. Okay, we're joined by the 2014 inductee into the Edward J. DeBartolo Sr. San Francisco 49ers Hall of Fame. He's also a member of the Bay Area Sports Hall of Fame. Super Bowl winning coach George Seifert joins us. Coach, just want to get your reaction when you found out that you were joining this esteemed Hall of Fame. What was that moment like for you?
Well, it was obviously, you know, very exciting. I've been retired for a number of years now, and then to be recognized for something that took place during my professional life, you know, is something that's special, and I think particularly special from the standpoint that having grown up in San Francisco and being a 49er fan, you know, as early as the early 50s, attending games at Kezar and certainly Candlestick, and now to have a certain amount of affiliation with the new stadium, you know, it's a special thing. There's no question about it.
And I wanted to ask you about your history at Kezar, because I found out that you were an usher at those games and you were working in the stadium and getting to know the football field, the team on the field. What about those moments really stood out to you and maybe drew you to football? How did that play a part in your football career?
You know, I was a high school player. I went to Polytechnic High School, which was directly across the street from Kezar. And we had a fairly famous high school coach, and the team had had years of success. So we had a situation worked out with the 49ers to get some players in and usher. In essence, it was to get us into the game to watch the games. And so we went to a number of game teammates and myself, and you know, as a young kid, obviously, you're impressed by the players of Whitey Tittle and Hugh McElhaney, Joe Perry, and, you know, I grew up to idolize a number of these guys, R.C. Owens and Billy Wilson and Cordy Soltaw and so forth, and certainly Bob St. Clair. Bob St. Clair was a player at Polytechnic High School before going on to USF and then eventually playing for the 49ers. So it was kind of a special time, and I was there for some exciting wins, and then I was there for some very depressing losses, particularly one game, potential championship-type game where we lost to Detroit, having led during the first half. And I think the thing that's kind of neat is then to span a period of time where I was in the box as a coach when we eventually made it to the Super Bowl by beating Dallas at Candlestick Park.
And you mentioned your experience on the field as a player. You went to the University of Utah and played both ways as a guard and a linebacker. Tell us about your playing style. Who was George Seifert, the football player? What were you most known for on the field?
In all reality, my playing experience took place most when I was playing in high school. I can't say I had a particularly illustrious career at Utah. I think I got a great education there, and a few knocks on the head here and there. But it was a wonderful school to go to. I was a zoology major, and Salt Lake City at that time, and I started in 1958, so it's grown quite a bit since then, but it was a beautiful place and a lot of nice people, and it was a wonderful experience.
So when did coaching get into the picture? When did you think that would be a pursuit of yours?
You know, there's no question, Milt Dax, my high school coach, influenced me or had quite an impact. When I was in college, you know, I also, you know, a number of teammates of mine, and one in particular, a fellow named Ben Stiles, and I had been roommates. He became a staff member, one of the coaches after graduation, and I was in graduate school, and I approached the coaching staff. Ray Nagel was the head coach in Utah at that time about becoming a graduate assistant, and I was, you know, still going to school and so forth, and so they allowed me to become a graduate assistant coach at the University of Utah, and I really, really, there's something clicked. I love teaching technique, and obviously I've always enjoyed the football environment. It started there, and then there was a fellow in my named Howard Richardson, who was an athletic director at Westminster College in Salt Lake City. And they were going to start their football program again, and he asked me if I was interested in their job, and I was. And so eventually I became the head coach at Westminster College, and then I was totally hooked.
You were that, from what I account, you were a head coach at 25. Is that correct?
That's correct.
I mean, that's pretty amazing just to start so early and have so much control. And then you had stints at Iowa and Oregon, Stanford and Cornell. Tell me about those experiences and how that shaped your football style, and then how you brought that to Bill Walsh in 1977 when you guys first met.
Well, I think, you know, first off, as far as Westminster, you mentioned that. It was a great experience, right? You know, two other coaches, a fellow named Tony Policronis and Mike Hunter and myself, and we did all the recruiting and all the scheduling. We bought all new equipment and painted the gymnasium and did whatever physical things we had to do with regard to the fields and practice. So it was from the bottom up, you might say, and it was spectacular. The University of Iowa, I was completing my master's degree, and so I went there as a graduate assistant before being hired at the University of Oregon, where that was my first full job. Jerry Fry hired me, and we had some outstanding coaches on the staff. It was one of the more enjoyable periods of my coaching career because of the people that were there in Eugene. John Robinson, formerly of USC and the Rams, who was on the staff. And Bruce Snyder, who would become the head coach eventually at Cal Berkeley and then Arizona State. And a number of others, Norm Chapman. I could go on and on, but Len Casanova and Jack Roach, who were, you know, affiliates of Santa Clara University. So it was a pretty neat time. When we left there after 5 years, we had some success, and though we could never quite beat Oregon State, so we wound up leaving, and I was fortunate Jack Christensen hired me at Stanford, and you know, that was kind of neat too, because I knew of Jack as certainly a professional football player, but you know, also he'd been the head coach of the 49ers, and so it was just my old team. So there was an attraction there, and he had been a great defensive back himself. And Norv Hecker was on our staff, who had played defensive back as well in professional leagues. And I was a defensive backfield coach, so it was neat to be able to draw on their experience. I left, you know, I was antsy and wanted to become a head coach again, and I had kind of a rough experience at Cornell. It was a great school, a great experience. Bob Kane was the athletic director, the man who hired me, and a lot of neat kids. They really had to be dedicated football players, because I think we couldn't start practice till like 7:30 or 8 o'clock in the evening because of the lab structure there. But it's a wonderful university. And then I wound up back at Stanford with Bill Walsh. And I don't know, I think the thing you say, what did I bring to the table? During my experiences at Utah in particular, I came across a couple of coaches that were a fellow named Bob Watson in particular, that were outstanding technicians and body mechanics coaches, and I really was kind of hooked on technique. And I think from that aspect, you know, it was one of my stronger suits when I first came to Stanford and worked for Bill.
What was that interaction like, getting to know Bill? He was establishing himself as a coach, a credible coach at that point of his career. Do you have any recollections of sort of those early interactions of how you were sort of formulating your vision to how to work together as a coaching staff?
Yeah, it was kind of interesting. Bill, when he first hired me, says, you know, I'm going to hire you. We met at Ricky's Hyatt House in Palo Alto, and we're having lunch, and he said, well, I want to hire you as coach. I don't know what you're going to coach yet, even though my most of my experience has been as a defensive backfield coach and working with defenses. And so, you know, that was different and interesting and unique. And the thing that I remember is that when we practiced, you know, it was just competitive. There weren't a lot of scripts that we had to run certain defenses or what have you. It was kind of like we were competing against Bill's offense each day in practice. And I think I developed an insight certainly into the offense, and it really helped me develop, you know, in my experiences in trying to defend that offense that eventually helped me as to become, you know, a professional coach.
And George, last year when we interviewed John McVay, we had so many, you know, great stories and anecdotes about how the team was really built and how they were able to have success through the draft and free agency and get the right players. But in addition to that, he mentioned you as a big unsung hero, a big addition to the coaching staff that really helped establish the defensive philosophy that made this franchise so great and win so many Super Bowls. Do you take a lot of pride in just knowing that, you know, that transition was a big part of the early success of this franchise in terms of Super Bowl wins? The way you guys were able to draft Ronnie and build the defensive backfield that you were coaching. Just tell me about your experiences joining the 49ers and the success that you were able to have on the back end of the defense.
You know, it's obvious. Yeah, sure. It was extremely exciting. Something I'm very proud of to have been part of the organization during the development of you might say some of the glory years of the 49ers. I mean, you know, everything kind of came together. There were a number of outstanding players certainly drafted and you know brought to the team with the free agency, and I think, you know, with Eddie in those early days when things were first getting going, you know, Eddie was out there whatever he could do to help. Bill, you know, kind of had a sense and a feel for what he wanted to do, and John McVay was his right hand man, and you know, we're all very involved. Everybody had input. Everybody was expected to tell and present exactly what his feelings were about certain players and so forth. I think the one draft that we had from a defensive standpoint that really helped us turn the corner was when we drafted Ronnie Lott and Eric Wright, Carlton Williamson. We're able to, the year before, we picked up Dwight Hicks through free agency. And, you know, I shouldn't even say free agency. We signed him as a free agent. He was working at a drugstore. And what an impact those four players had. And also, I should mention the addition of Ray Rhodes. Ray had played for me my first year as coach with the 49ers. And he really bought into the technique style that we were interested in, and he had great rapport with the players and was an integral part of developing our backfield. When you stop and think about it, to win a Super Bowl and have the season that we did with three rookies in that secondary, and the other thing that a lot of people don't remember is that all four of those players were safeties in college. And that means we had Ronnie Lott at one corner, who was a safety in college, and Eric Wright at the other corner, who was a safety at Missouri. So that's pretty unique in itself. And then I'd go on to say, you know, the other coaches on the staff, in particular Bill McPherson, had a, you know, just a profound impact on our defense, certainly as did Norv Hecker with his professional expertise as well.
And that's a great point. I mean, the early years, you guys really built with some great names and great additions, and it seemed like everything was sort of hitting at the right time. And you guys ascended to the top of the NFL rather quickly and won a couple Super Bowls. And then you have the biggest challenge of any head coach, which I would say is taking over for Bill as he stepped down. I mean, I know you've been asked about this hundreds and thousands of times, but if you can just recall what that was like when you found out that Bill was going to walk away from football and it was your turn to keep things going. I mean, as a fan of the team, as someone who grew up watching the football organization, just really take a lot of pride in seeing that there was no drop-off. You held the fort down and you made sure that this football team was going to be successful. So if you could, walk us through just that moment of becoming a head coach in the National Football League and also doing it under that circumstance.
That was pretty a special time. There's no question about that, and it was an exciting time for my entire family. And my mother-in-law was really happy because that meant that we'd be able to stay a few more years in the Bay Area, and that she lived in San Francisco, and that was kind of a fun thing, and that we were able to, our family, through work at Stanford and then the years, my 17 years at San Francisco, you know, we spent 20 years or so of my coaching career right there in the Bay Area, which is mother-in-laws are always happy about. But having been a fan of the team and idolized, you know, those players that I had mentioned during my high school years, and then to eventually, you know, become the head coach, it's indescribable, the feeling initially, but I also knew that it was a huge responsibility and it would not be easy. There were some aspects. I even to this day, you know, you say replacing Bill Walsh, what sort of sense was it? It never leaves you. I mean, it was something that was very, it was tough. And yet, you know, I think I was prepared for it. And I think I was the right guy for the job at the time. I know as an assistant coach, Bill was very demanding, which was what he should have been. And there was an awful lot of pressure to maintain the standard that we established fairly early. And I think that really, having dealt with that type of pressure in many ways, when I became the head coach, I can't say there was less pressure, but I was prepared to handle that aspect of it. And I knew and had a sense for how we operated, what things we did for success, how we handled players, how we interacted with players, our offense and defensive system, the time schedules, practice schedules, all of that I've been a part of. The development of and believed in, and so it was a natural and easy transition for me from that standpoint. I didn't want to go in and say, okay, I've been on the defensive side of the ball. This fall we're going to draft big linemen and try to smash mouth the ball down the field, and then we'll control the team on defense. It was, you know, the beauty of our offense, the artistic sense of the offense, and the way it cut people up. You know, and having been working a lot with the defensive side of the secondary, and to know the weaknesses in defenses, and then, you know, to see how the offense functioned and operated, there's no way we're going to change that. And certainly our personnel, we had great personnel for what we were doing offensively and defensively. It was a challenge, but something that was exciting. And, you know, for the most part, it worked out. There's certainly a few disappointments.
Well, Coach, the culture was established. You had a hand in that. The veterans, they were there to make the transition as smooth as possible. And you had so many great, successful seasons, whether it was a Super Bowl or not. The expectations were always so high. So, you know, you can't win them all every single year, but you certainly put the 49ers in position to win the Super Bowl every single year that you were the coach. But then the other challenge of not only taking over for Bill Walsh, you had to be a part of the ushering of the Hall of Fame quarterback shuffle, where you coached Joe Montana and he was at the top of his game. The injury happened against the Giants. I was a kid at that game. That was one of the first games I remember going to at Candlestick. And then Steve Young was so good that it was hard to deny him off the field. Tell me about just your thoughts on that transition and sort of being fortunate looking back at it now to have worked with two Hall of Fame quarterbacks during your tenure as the head coach.
Well, in all honesty, the transition was brutal. It was certainly one of the more difficult things that I'd gone through during my coaching career. I mean, you know, Joe had meant so much not only to the football part of the team, but just the emotional foundation of the tradition during that period of the 49ers and the ties that he had with ownership and all the people within the organization. So that was not that's something that still, you might say, haunts me to this day. You know, the story I like to tell is, I don't really like to tell, but is when I was a kid, how disappointed I was when the coach then, Red Hickey, traded away Y.A. Tittle. And I always think, as a young man, you know, God, how could the coach have done that? And there, the work of fate, a few years later, here I'm trading away the hero, one of the leading players of all time with the San Francisco 49ers. So, you know, that part was, it was a tough time. And I think when I took the head job, that was one thing that I realized, if I had any success at all, I would be there during the period of time when there would be some great players move on. And, you know, I didn't relish that part of it, but I had, you know, the responsibilities you have as a head coach. Bill was obviously a tremendous player, and, you know, I couldn't say enough about, you know, what he had done to help the teams with San Francisco win over the years. And then we were fortunate, there's no question about it, to have Steve Young in the wings. I mean, you think about it, we had Joe Montana one period of time that I was coaching there. Joe Montana, Steve Young, and Steve Bono. Steve Bono went on to be a starting quarterback as well, and was a fine player himself. But then to have Steve, you know, who was, you know, frothing at the mouth or bit or whatever the expression is, you know, to get in there and show what he could do and how he developed and had developed a sense to, you know, play within the scheme of the 49ers that 49ers had developed and be so competitive. And you know, he kind of came in to a situation that was similar to mine. He was following a great, great player in Joe, just as I, you know, was following a great, great coach in Bill Walsh. So there were similarities in that standpoint, and he certainly, I would say, exceeded all expectations.
In winning two Super Bowls as a head coach, tell me about the thrill of doing that, overseeing the roster, leading the men out on the practice fields and getting them prepared for games, and then going out winning world championships as the head figure. How did that rank in terms of all your accomplishments in your football career?
You know, it was interesting in that there was such, the culture at the time was, I mean, that was the expectation. I mean, everything, you know, you absolutely were supposed to win the championship. I mean, if we were to look at it honestly, my second Super Bowl season, it was, you know, it was out there. It was well known that, you know, basically we signed a number of outstanding free agents. We put a star-studded team together, and not that every time you do that, do you win? But I was expected to win the Super Bowl, or I was going to be, you know, looking for employment somewhere else. So, you know, it was part of the culture to win, and that was the expectation. To win that first year, you know, it was just, that's what I was supposed to do. And then to suffer a couple of losses, that's not what I was supposed to do. And it was gut-wrenching, and I probably made a couple of mistakes because of the fact that it was so gut-wrenching. And then to win, though, that second Super Bowl, you know, the, like I say, when a team brings together a number of, you know, so-called star players from other clubs and integrates them with your team, it, as we've seen over the years, that in itself does not guarantee success. And can become very, very difficult because you have all these characters from with different mindsets. And so I'd say that team in particular, enabling that group and being part of the team and the organization to bring that group together and win that Super Bowl, that's something that I'm particularly proud of.
Definitely. I remember growing up watching that game against the Chargers and just the repetition of touchdowns and seeing Steve just get the ball out of his hands quick and find the open man. It was just really impressive defensively as well. I mean, really shut down San Diego early and handled their business in that game. It was a great moment. But, I mean, you've been involved with the franchise now for, you know, coaching-wise for almost two decades. There's so many great games and moments that you've been a part of. If you had to choose one, I know I might be putting you on the spot with this one, but if there's one game, one critical moment on the field that you really think as my favorite game with the 49ers, what would that game be?
Well, that one's pretty easy, actually. It was in the championship game with the Dallas Cowboys when we first won the game to send us to the Super Bowl in Detroit, and, you know, there was the catch and all, and but the play that stands out in my mind during the course of that game was after Joe threw the pass to Dwight and we took the lead, there was still a minute or so left, and Danny White was throwing a pass to Drew Pearson. Drew caught the ball and was going to split our secondary and actually go on to score the touchdown right after Joe had thrown, you know, what's now known as the catch. And thank God for Eric Wright running and diving out and grabbing Drew Pearson by the back of the neck and slamming him to the ground. Had that play not happened, there would have been no publicity. Well, there had been publicity about the catch, but it would certainly have not been what it is, and it might have been the end of my career as well. And as history would then have it, the following play, Danny White went back to pass and fumbled the ball, and Stuckey recovered, and we won the game, went on to the Super Bowl. But that game was as exciting as it gets, having seen, you know, some of the downtime or traumatic losses of past 49er teams, and then to finally accomplish and get on to the Super Bowl, and that particular play being so meaningful and not that well advertised, really, for the impact that it had on the future of the 49ers.
Well, I'll definitely make sure to bring that to light with this piece that we're working on for you. But if this might be a little bit more of a stumper for you. How about a favorite player of all the guys you've coached, worked with, used your techniques to elevate their game? Was there a favorite player-coach dynamic, a guy out there that you really saw rise through the ranks because of your working relationship? Who might have been for you?
Well, it's difficult, certainly, with so many great players and so forth, but the way you pose the question, you know, it kind of, you know, it would be Ray Rhodes. Ray played for me my first year, like I said, as a defensive backfield coach for the 49ers, and he bought into the technique aspect of what we were doing and became an outstanding teacher himself. Of not only technique, but, you know, he had a unique ability to motivate and, you know, was not only a fine defensive coordinator for us, but, you know, went on to become a head coach in the NFL himself. And, you know, I think that's pretty special. And just off the record, or not off the record, but everything's on the record that we're talking about now, but a little bit off topic. But the other thing that was kind of neat, I just thought of this in thinking about Ray Rhodes, is that two of the defensive coaches that we had went on to become head coaches, Ray Rhodes being one and Pete Carroll being the other. You know, Bill McPherson could have, if he wanted, I mean, he was that type of coach, but, you know, he wasn't really interested in that you know, way of life. And then certainly the other thing that's pretty special, I think, is that three of our offensive coordinators during my time as head coach went on to become head coaches. And, help me here, Mike Holmgren and Mike Shanahan, and then, more recently, Mark Trestman for Chicago. And so I think that's kind of unique, too. It's not about players, but just kind of talking about Ray led me into that that experience.
Yeah, the coaching tree is endless. I mean, it sprouts on and on and on. There's so many great guys who have been associated with this franchise. And I'm glad you mentioned the coaching staff. I mean, the players as well. The family atmosphere is so apparent when you come back to Alumni Weekend or the Hall of Fame banquets. And you are always attending, whether you're seeing Roger Craig get inducted, Jerry Rice, R.C. Owens recently, and even John McVay. This upcoming event is all for you. It's all to acknowledge your career and your achievements. Tell me about just what you think it's going to be like, knowing that it's a moment to share with your colleagues, but it's also to celebrate your career with the franchise.
Well, you know, as we've been talking now, obviously so many people within the team and the organization, you know, were a part of my career and certainly what success we had. And so I'm, you know, permanently indebted to all the, you know, the hard work and time that went into achieving the success that we had, both when I was a young assistant and eventually going on to become the head coach. The fact of being honored like this and being in, I assume, you know, your picture's on a wall somewhere alongside, you know, fellas that were, that I idolized when I was a high school player. I mentioned R.C. and Gordy and Joe Perry and, you know, Wyatt Tittle, all these guys, you know, St. Clair. You know, I remember I used to like to watch Hugh McElhaney come out of the locker room afterwards because he was always dressed so immaculately and the way he dressed. And I don't know, there's so many things that influence you, and then to be associated with that group and then also be associated with the players that are in from the era that I coached, the players that we've been talking about, Jerry and Jerry Rice and Joe Montana, Steve Young and Ronnie Lott, and you know, you can go on and on. So it's special. It's something that I'm very proud of, and I'm certainly proud from the standpoint that my grandkids, I hope, will enjoy the whole atmosphere and experience.
It's an amazing fraternity, a special club for so many generations of the 49er family. And you look at the current team that's out on the field, there's so many great players who potentially could join you down the ranks. I just wanted to get your take on the defense that the 49ers will put out on the field in 2014. Your thoughts on this group, and what would it be like if you were the head coach? Would you enjoy working with this group?
Oh, wow. Yeah. I mean, they're awesome. I walked out on the field one time and for a coin flip a couple of years ago for one of the playoff games, and the 49ers, we were playing the Saints, and I was standing next to a couple of the defensive players that were getting ready to play, and I couldn't be more impressed. I mean, they were, you know, it was like being next to dragons. I mean, they were snorting fire and pawing their, like a bull's pawing their feet on the ground. I mean, the emotion that I felt at that time, I don't know if I've ever felt it before. And so I'm really excited about what they've been doing, certainly on defense as well as offense. And Coach Harbaugh, I'm a big Coach Harbaugh fan. He was such a competitive guy when he played. And he obviously is a great competitor now and such a wonderful job. I mean, what he's doing is particularly amazing. And I think it's just neat for him to, you know, kind of get the organization and the team back on track, to kind of fulfill the destiny that we always anticipate we should have for whatever reasons.
It's pretty neat that you coached against him. I remember growing up, there was a game in Indianapolis where he, I think he led a comeback field goal win and beat us, which was a pretty painful early loss. I mean, every loss in the regular season back then was just like the worst ever, but definitely a cool dynamic that you've coached against Jim as a player too.
I remember that game distinctly, and the thing I remember about it, when the game was over, as his teammates were running off the field and our players were starting to turn to leave the game, you know, we had lost, and he came running by our bench with his arms extended out like an airplane, and he was kind of mimicking an airplane doing a flyby on us. And gloating in the glory of beating the San Francisco 49ers, and I thought that guy was something special then to have the courage to do something like that. But I guess we were, you know, we didn't certainly retaliate, and I enjoyed watching him in that moment and thinking back about it, to be honest with you.
Yeah, definitely. Coach is just a fiery competitor, and definitely has rubbed off on the players he's working with. And Coach, we want to thank you so much for joining us and sort of going over your accomplishments and telling some stories for our fans. I think they're definitely going to love sort of your insight. You were right there for all these great memories and moments in team history, and to see you acknowledged and recognized in this fashion, I think, is just a great moment for this organization. And to do it at Levi Stadium, I don't know if you've thought about this, but you're the first Hall of Fame inductee at this new stadium, and so all of our fans are going to be able to come out to this new billion-dollar home of the franchise and celebrate your achievement. So I think that's definitely a special moment, and I'm proud to be a part of that too.
Well, thank you. It's neat, you know, because I can really kind of claim that I was a part of the experience of Kezar, and certainly a part of the experience of Candlestick, and now this honor is at Levi's Stadium is, you know, kind of frosting on the cake. So thank you very much.